Jaspreet Boparai and Don Nicholson with Greenwashed on RCR, Reality Check Radio.
Welcome back to RCR Greenwashed with Jaspreet and Don. And a hot topic in New Zealand is always, it never seems to go away, it's about the price of electricity, what we do right, what we do wrong, and what we could do to perhaps quell the angst about the weekly and monthly power bills that we get in this inside the household, let alone for industry. And the person we always like to I like to think is the guru on this, we had him on a year ago, is Brian Leyland. He's a consulting engineer in power systems, and we've got him on again today to give us a 101 on the electricity market in New Zealand. What's right, what's wrong, what could be the remedy? So g'day Brian, great to have you back on RCR. I know it's a wide-ranging subject and I know you've written prolifically about it, but in a base sense, what do you see as right, what do you see as wrong, and what do you see the remedy is for the electricity market? And could you also explain how that market works, and talk a little bit about EMCO, perhaps at the base of this? Because I know we trade our electricity, is that right, in half-hour segments?
Yes.
Right. Well, the floor is yours.
Well, thanks for the nice intro. I think what we need to look at first is what we're trying to do. Electricity is the lifeblood of the economy. We just can't survive without it. Its value to us is much greater than its price. And then when you look at what we need, it's a reliable and economic supply. We need to know it's there. And we need to know it's low cost, because that boosts the economy. So if we look at what we would like to do, a power system is a whole collection of power stations, and you add new ones, and each new one should be the station that provides the lowest cost electricity into the future. And you've got all these different sorts of power stations that you need for peak demand, base load, and varying load. So if we look at it that way, and then look at our existing electricity market, does it provide this? And the answer is no. It doesn't look ahead. It doesn't provide the lowest cost power station, the lowest cost system. We're building wind farms because they're cheap at the station boundary, but they need expensive backup, which the consumer pays for, not the owner of the wind farms. We're not building enough good stations. We know we're short of electricity. Transpower is warning us that we haven't got electricity. The prices has already shot up high, and it's not producing new stations of the right sort. At the moment, the price is 37 cents per kilowatt hour, and this is a wholesale price. People are paying about 33 cents domestic, and it doesn't add up. Sooner or later, this high price is going to come through to domestic, all for no good reason, because 65% of our electricity is low-cost hydropower, and we've got a lot of low-cost and high-cost geothermal stations, and then we've got gas-fired stations with not enough gas, and we've got the coal station, which is running virtually continuously, even though it's only supposed to run when we're short of power. So we're short of power, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Just the fact that it's running proves it. So basically, we're in a mess. Transpower's given warnings that it cannot guarantee to keep the lights on over peak demands. And there's an increasing risk of serious shortages in a dry year. And you can argue that most of this has been triggered by our electricity market that we've got now. It's the one that's providing the incentives which don't produce the right outcomes.
I was, when I was involved in the sector, I was aware that, well, part of one of the companies we were part of, we were investing in small hydro schemes, but boy, they were hard to get off the ground. And yeah, this is in the last sort of 7 or 8 years. So, yeah, I just, no wonder people have struggled to have the reinvestment in the better option, which is hydro for New Zealand. Because we were told the Bradford reforms of the 90s were going to be the Nirvana state.
Yeah.
It's a bit like the power of general competence for the local government was going to be the Nirvana state for us in 2002. And all we've seen is three times the rate of CPI in local authorities. Electricity seems to have gone above, cost seems to have been above the cost of inflation or cost of CPI.
And certainly above the cost of generation.
So what's wrong? We've got multiple generator retailers. We've got separate EDBs. We've got trans. It's all separated out. Surely there must be competitive tension between all these players, and we should be the monopoly provision is not there. I mean, we've got rid of the monopoly. Surely that's a good thing.
Well, I think two CEOs, when they departed, summed it up. Both of them said the way to make money in the electricity market is to keep the system on the edge of a shortage. And that's what they're doing, and we're seeing the results.
And
that's how they read the incentive in the electricity market, not to provide a reliable and economic supply, but to make money by keeping the system on the edge of a shortage. If under the market, if there's too much generating plant, the price crashes. At the moment, every time the wind blows hard and the load's low, you get a price crash. It goes down to nothing. Then a few hours later, it's back up at 20 and 30 cents. It's crazy. Nobody can plan ahead. Nobody can plan long term.
And when you think about those reforms, well, this is my brain seems to work a bit weirdly, perhaps. But looking back, the reforms of the 90s started about the same time New Zealand did enacted an RMA, a Resource Management Act, the same time that climate stuff started happening internationally. And you link it all into the modern day, and now we've got net zero around the world, the concepts in the West just eating countries alive. Do you think that's been a large reason? You know, the push for wind and solar in New Zealand now seems to have grown out of proportion. And the reason for that, do you think, is it because we've got this backup of what was and still is in our statutes of net zero 2050?
I think wind and solar have come from overseas. The whole industry exists because overseas it's heavily subsidized. And this has produced relatively cheap wind farms. So people promote them in New Zealand, knowing that they won't have to pay for the backup because of this basically hidden subsidy. But if overseas governments hadn't decided to subsidize them, and by sometimes enormous amounts, like 60 cents a kilowatt hour in Australia, the industry just wouldn't exist. And likewise, the electric car industry. There's no real economic justification for switching to electric cars.
So, sorry, Jasper, just one last question, if I could. The big bogey with wind and solar for me is batteries. Yeah, if every other entity has to have backup or can alter its load, why can't the wind and solar providers just sort of say, we've got to have our own backup so that we can hold their surplus juice until it's needed?
This is exactly the thing that everybody ignores, it seems, from top to bottom. You need lots and lots of backup. And according to the predictions of the Climate Change Commission, which are not based on good engineering, we're going to need 4,000 megawatts of peak. The peak demand is going to increase by about 4,000 megawatts. So we're going to need about 4,000 megawatts of storage, because if you meet it with wind and solar, as they dream of, at times it won't be generating anything and we'll still have to supply the load. So you've got this 4,000 megawatts, which has to be low-cost, long-term storage. There is no available technology either in existence or on the horizon that can do that. And nobody talks about it. They talk about batteries. I worked out that to average out the supply from a wind farm over a year, the batteries would cost more than 50 times the cost of the wind farm. If you knock the batteries down to 10% of the current cost, it would still be too expensive. And people like Transpower and the Electricity Authority talk about batteries providing, keeping the lights on over dry years and prolonged wind droughts. It's crazy. They're just not thinking things through.
Well, last comment from me, and then I'll let you, sorry, Jaspreet, I'm hogging this. Last comment from me is they've been told, their masters have told them, they can't do anything but play into the climate change narrative, the net zero narrative, and you have to do this stuff. So just make it work. That's my cynical view of them. They really, I mean, these people aren't stupid. They know what they're doing is just politics more than being giving consumers of New Zealand and industry in New Zealand the abundant, lowest cost energy that they possibly could. They know they're not doing that.
Yeah, but the really weird thing is that we're not developing large hydro. Mm. It's at least 2,000 megawatts of perfectly acceptable hydro in the South Island. Some of it's already been investigated. Some of it's known to be there. Nobody's even talking about it. If you're so keen on being carbon free, why aren't we developing hydro? Why aren't we looking at nuclear power? Why are we putting our faith in unreliable wind and solar power? It's crazy. I think it's become a religion. It's no longer, it's an article of faith rather than an article of logic.
You said, Brian, that currently the power prices per kilowatt hour is about 32, 33 cents. Did I hear that right?
Domestic price.
But can you give us an idea, and for a layperson, how much have they increased in, say, the last 15, 20 years?
And increased from around about 8 cents 10, 15 years ago.
Oh, my God.
To 30. I mean, the 30 at the moment is a bit of an aberration. Hmm. But it's been between 20 and 30 all this year as a result of the lack of rain on the hydro lakes. But over the last 3 or 4 years, it would be 20 to 25 cents.
Point of clarification here, though, that's a bundled cost. That's generation, transmission, the whole lot. And if you were to break that down, that 33 cents, say, down into components, what is the generation component of it? That's the stuff that's traded on the half hour cycle. That's often from sort of what, 0 to 6 or 7 cents, or
0 to $2.
Yeah, I've heard of the $2. Yes, yeah.
Not long ago, it was $2.
Yep. Right.
Yeah.
And the transmission cost from Transpower is so much, and then you've got the EDB, the local distribution networks, which I'm of the knowledge it's around 25 to 33% of your bill, and then you've got your retailing. So you've got four components of your bill to get up the 33 cents. But you're right, it's gone up significantly by what, a factor of four in what, 15-20 years?
But it's the wholesale price is the one that's jacking it up, and so it's now becoming the overriding factor. Transmission, distribution, and retailing have been basically fairly steady at probably 16, 20 cents. And they're still with that. But when you get a 30-cent power wholesale price, then you're up to 40, 45 cents domestic price.
Wow. Now, you were talking about there being no logic in all of this. And I just seem to think there's a whole lot of people who are somehow seeing an economic opportunity for them. A case in point being, and you might not have seen this, Brian, but a couple of days ago, there came this write-up in the Herald talking about the $1 billion win for New Zealand KiwiPower users, online company charges, how much they can pay, how much they can charge their consumers. Now, I looked at the author of that report, Mike Casey, because that name was familiar to me. Now, this gentleman, his profile shows him as Mike Casey is the chief executive of Rewiring Aotearoa, a New Zealand charity dedicated to electrifying millions of fossil fuel machines across the country, as well as a cherry orchardist from central Otago who electrified all the machines on the farm. So the gentleman not just saw an opportunity that time when there were subsidies or, you know, there were funds available for decarbonization to electrify his cherry orchard, the central Otago, he's now set up a charity actually, talking about that our entire purpose of rewiring Aotearoa is a political charity born out of the need to meet New Zealand's climate targets. This is what's happening. I doubt yes. anyone who's on this pathway is looking at the economics of it. They have yeah. found legislative privilege, as Don would put it.
Yeah, that's true. And the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Authority is subsidizing net zero. But the other side of the story is that I've developed a smart thermostat for controlling water heaters, which has got huge advantages for everyone and will make a substantial reduction in the price of power and make it easier to run the system and all sorts of things. It benefits every sector of the industry and particularly the consumers, but no single entity, the way the market works, can develop it and make money out of it.
Yeah.
So here's this really attractive thing. Nobody's argued that it's not a good idea. And it just can't get off the ground. The Electricity Authority could get it off the ground by saying it benefits everyone, even if you don't have an electric hot water heater, and it does. So it can be paid for by a levy. And it helps managing the system frequency, which the Electricity Authority fund by everyone paying a levy. So it's part of that. They won't look at it.
So on that basis as well, then, would you support variable tariffs for time of use? Do you support that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and this thermostat basically does that. It automatically sees a price peak and backs off your water heater.
Right.
That would do that without even having to think about it. Certainly, there's a lot of logic in making power more expensive over peak demands, but not a crippling price, because there's plenty of industries who can't do anything but keep going. If you've got a dairy factory, it's got to work. It's got to keep going. Otherwise, you've got an environmental disaster. Oh. So there's all kinds of things.
Well,
definitely, we should pay more for electricity when it's expensive, but not a suicidal price that will cause you to shut your industry down.
Well, of course, through the GIDI, it was called the GIDI Fund, there has been lots of electrification of industrial boilers at great cost to not only the companies, but also the taxpayers. And
not only that, the atmosphere, because if Huntley's running and it has been running for months, for every ton of coal you save in an industrial boiler, Huntley has to burn 2.5 tons to make the electricity. It's crazy. It's really crazy.
Yeah, that's not often thought about. And of course, importing coal as well to have the backup on top of all that seems a little odd. But it's put huge demand on. And of course, if you're a supplier of goods and services into the networks, it's been an okay position to be in, because you know, doing those upgrades, and I was part of this, so I'm putting my hand up. Yeah, it was great business. If you saw the hard-working taxpayers basically cross funding your business, you're not going to chuck that opportunity away. And so the beefing up of the reconductoring of lines around the my province has been significant. And it's supposedly has built this long-term resiliency into the community's asset. But, yeah, all under the guise of climate change. What happened to logic and realism around this? I don't know. I never got it.
But one thing we've got to remember is just how important the reliable and economic supply is. I work in Nigeria, and there a third of the electricity is generated by emergency generators. The lights go out half a dozen times a day. Every hotel and big business has emergency generators, and they're flaring gas offshore.
Yeah, isn't that incredible?
But the price is so, all that produces a price of both buying the power and having backup generators so high that it cripples the economy. And we've seen this in Europe. The green policies have jacked up the price of electricity. So the major heavy industries in Germany and UK and stuff were all shutting down, and now they're buying the steel and the other materials from China and India, where it's made with coal-fired electricity. It's crackers. It just doesn't make sense.
Maybe it was never supposed to. Maybe the intended outcome, and I'm speaking like a conspiracy theorist here, was to, you know, demolish their own industries. That's what they're doing effectively, and nobody is accountable.
No. And that's another problem we were saying, accountable. In New Zealand, out of the market, nobody's head rolls if we have a major shortage.
Yep.
In the old days, the ECNZ, if there'd been a big shortage under the ECNZ, there would have been heads rolling. And now nobody. They could all sit there and say, we have a market. It works. Didn't you notice? That's the market working.
But I've often seen so many of these reports, and you know, some of them cross our tables at work and other things. They are not being created by democratically elected people. You have consultants aplenty, a dime a dozen, to give you a report with the exact outcome that you want to push a particular agenda, you know, to move things a certain way. And those guys, they're just, you know, a consultant. There's no accountability there, and yet it then ends up at the taxpayers' cost, bearing the perverse outcomes that are being deliberately foisted on us.
Yeah. Now, you write the terms of reference so that only one answer is possible. And you exclude important things. You never say, and any other relevant matter. You never put that in the terms of reference. And yet it should be in every terms of reference.
There's never a full cost given to most things, this cost of net zero, cost of decarbonization.
Yeah.
If these costs were put out there transparently, there'd be an uproar, and they know that. And it's not. Yeah. It's all under the guise of saving the planet.
Yeah, but they tell us and keep on telling us, mostly by implication, that if New Zealand reduces its emissions, we will have a better climate and all these storms and things won't come. That's nothing more stupid than that, because the climate is a belongs to the world. Well, everything that we do blows off into the Eastern Pacific. So they're implying that little tiny change made by New Zealand will make a miraculous difference to our climate. That's disinformation on a grand scale. And you hear it time and time again.
Well, as recently as this week, there's been more in print media talking about how New Zealand is subjected to more catastrophic storms and events than ever before. When around the world, that's, and we should talk locally, but in general sense, that's not what I read from academics that are studying this stuff. We've got less catastrophic events are happening around the world in terms of weather than ever before, or than in the last 100 years anyway. What does happen though is because often these events do happen in a more populated area compared to 100 years ago. It affects more people when it does happen. But the constant hamming it up that catastrophic events are happening and atmospheric rivers are just, you know, the new thing in town, unbelievable.
I mean, around for millions of years. It's just incredible, the nonsense. And the IPCC, the technical side of the IPCC, came up with a recent report that there's been no increase in floods, storms, hurricanes, cyclones, tornadoes, and a whole list of things, and said statistically we cannot prove that there's been an abnormal increase in them. And still these people are telling us that all these things are
hyped up Cyclone Gabriel for everything now, since last year.
Yeah.
Well, we saw it with the Christchurch earthquakes too, let alone the Kaikoura earthquakes. And no disrespect to the profession, the engineers have seen an opportunity to lift the earthquake rulings around the country, and maybe that's right, I don't know, but this comes at great cost to people that own buildings, and even in downtown Invercargill. I mean, there was a lot of pretty decrepit old buildings there, but no one can afford to do them up under the new rules, so they're just going to sit idle until they fall down.
I've got a friend who's closely involved in the earthquake regulations, and he said, as if you look at the cost of the regulations and the cost and the number of lives it saves, it's disproportionate. You could far better put that money would save far more lives if it was put somewhere else.
We need to speak to that guy. That sounds like someone, right off our alley, Don.
It does too. And look, we've gone way off our remit here. This is going to be a 101 on the electricity market, but we've covered a whole lot of stuff. I mean, if you're to sum up, Brian, what is the state of nirvana for New Zealand energy provision of electricity? Sorry, the provision of electricity.
In the short term, it doesn't look good because people who are proposing to build wind and solar farms are going to soon realize that the price will crash every time they're generating a lot. And so as we get more of them, they will become less and less economic and they'll stop building them. And we're not looking at building other things like other hydro schemes. We are building geothermal pretty well as fast as we can. Right. We should be doing more exploration drilling for geothermal. Mm-hmm. We should be contemplating nuclear power. And we should accept that, and we should certainly be going for gas. We definitely, from all points of view, we need gas. And the electricity, the Climate Commission seems to think that there'll be a small supply of gas available. And when we need it, suddenly it'll turn into a large supply. So they're saying all the drilling companies need to stop producing until it's a dry year and then produce like mad. Well, that's not the way to run an oil field. And that's not the way to make money.
Doesn't sound like it. So
they just haven't thought it through.
Last point, the transmission network, the main national grid, is it robust enough to handle all this stuff? Do we need to do even more? Well, I know it's constantly being maintained and perhaps upgraded in certain segments, but is it robust enough to handle what's in the pipeline now?
It depends on what we develop. If we develop lots of wind and solar farms generating not much power and scattered all over the country, and the power going in all directions according to which way the wind's blowing, we will need much more transmission. If we build plants situated in the right place and which produce a steady output, and if we stop the nonsense about if you put a gas-fired plant in Auckland, you have to pay gas transmission charges. If you put it in Taranaki or where the gas field is, then Transpower pay the transmission charges. So there's a disparity which makes you put your gas-fired power station in the wrong place. You should be putting it at the end of pipelines, not at the beginning of them. And the pipelines are basically underused.
And one last thing that I should have asked earlier in this interview is Lake Onslow, pumped hydro, it seems to be on the back burner. Is that something you're okay with?
Okay, Lake Onslow was a dead duck from the beginning. It should never even have been started, and it should have been killed off as soon as it was obvious it was expensive. Mm. And it's very expensive. It's more expensive than the nuclear station, which would generate continuously. That's the end of it.
Well, Brian, look, you've given us a very good 101 and a whole lot more. The aspect of this that gets me is most New Zealanders don't want to understand this stuff, and I don't blame them. They just want cheap, reliable, abundant electricity to fuel their life. Yeah, where electricity does run our lives in a very dominant way. And each day, you have people concerned about their power bill. So something's got to give because I want this economy to be flourishing. So do you. And we know that it will flourish with cheap energy. It will not flourish as long as we've got overbearing regulatory influences stuffing up our cheap and abundant energy that we do have, but just seem to have it in perhaps the wrong place.
Certainly got it. Potential is there. The only way you can do that, I think, is to have a revolutionary change to the electricity market, to one whose objectives are to provide a reliable and economic supply and where generators compete for long-term contracts to build and operate stations, which in the long term are the maximum benefit to New Zealand.
And there we have it. Yeah. That sums it up beautifully. Sums it up beautifully. Thanks, Brian, for coming back on RCR. Love the way you just are able to express it. I mean, I know a bit about the industry, and you know, it's it's difficult to get it down to the level that we need it to be when there's so much engineering required to get this right, let alone have the financing of it right. So, look, great to have you back on our show, and all the best for the rest of your work in Nigeria and around the world, because I know you're offshore a lot.
So, all the best. I don't go back to Nigeria. It's too dangerous now.
Right. Okay. All right. But thanks for coming back on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Brian.
Are you on the RCR mailing list? Never miss a beat of the news and hard-hitting stories you've come to know and love. Stay in the loop. Visit realitycheck.radio/email.